for listening to the Rivers Podcast. For more information on this teaching, visit our website at theriver.info.
Good morning. Good morning, River Church. How you guys doing? I'm looking in the back and I see a couple of people with like a confused expression on their face. People thinking, is Pastor Rob tanning? What's going on? But no, I'm not Pastor Rob. My name is Ituha Cloud. And I'm just privileged to be here this morning to be asked to share my story. Pastor Rob and I have become good friends. And I was listening to the sermon he had preached last week in which he talked about the incredible good news of how Jesus the King came out of the tomb. And so I'm here to share with you the reality that because Jesus walked out of that tomb, I was able to walk out of mine. My story starts out in New York City, the South Bronx. My parents separated when I was 3 years old. My father was in California, and my mother worked hard raising me and a brother in the South Bronx. In the era that I grew up in, it was very poverty-stricken, very common to see abandoned buildings, burnt buildings, broken bottles, winos, attics, you name it, it was there. And I can remember going to school and never really feeling good about myself nor my community. In fact, not having a father in my life really didn't sit well. I would go to elementary school and I was good academically. I can read, I could do the math, but I was labeled a problem child because I had a problem with my temper. And if you rub me the wrong way, I'll leave with it. I was fighting. This just became a normal response. Anger, fight. I remember a significant event took place when I was 8 years old. Mind you, it was me, my brother, and my mother. Well, I had another brother who was from Chicago who moved into New York with us. And he was around 17. And for the first time, it felt like things were starting to change because this brother paid attention to me. In fact, we would go out in the neighborhoods and we would climb trees and we would explore and he would listen to me. But little did I know, 6 months into his stay, that things would begin to change as he began to violate me, touch me in areas in which no boy should be touched. And he said to me, "Don't tell nobody." And I didn't. I took that wound and I pushed it deep down. About a year later, he moved out, but that wound was there. I remember talking to my mother one day about my father. Who is he? What does he do? And she said, "Your father's actually an actor slash model in California." What? Wait a minute. So we here, we hungry, we struggling, and you saying my father's this guy that's well-to-do somewhere in California? I said, "I want to meet him." She said, "Well, I don't have contact with him, but when you're of age and you want to meet your father, feel free, go ahead." And so as a kid, I kind of held on, you know, to that hope that, man, in my little mind, if I could meet my father, we could then ride off into the sunset and life would be better. At the age of 12, though, reality would hit and another wound would be inflicted. Just a regular day, 12-year-old kid, I'm in the back, I'm playing Nintendo. How many people remember Mario Brothers? Remember that? I'm back there, do-do-do-do-do-do, my little world, playing my game, and the phone rings, and my mother's in the other room, and she picks it up, and she just begins to wail, cry in a way I never heard my mother cry, this pain coming out of this woman. I drop the joystick, and I run in the room, and I'm like, "Ma, what's going on?" She says, "Your father's dead." "What?" "Yeah, your father died of HIV/AIDS. Absolutely devastated. I can remember, 12 years old, completely enraged, completely cold, and thinking, I don't care. I don't care anymore. In the book of Ezekiel 36:26, it referenced this. It referenced a heart of stone. And that's exactly what happened to me. With my heart of stone, with my depression, with my hope being destroyed, I didn't care. And I took that attitude with me for a long time. In order to medicate my hurt, I went out in the streets. I started hanging out with other fatherless boys. And I found some relief when I would drink and smoke. Well, that didn't stay just drinking smoke. By the age of 14, I started snorting cocaine. And by the age of 16, I had a heroin addiction. I was snorting $50 of heroin a day. In order for you to support this habit, what are you going to do? Well, I chose the route of taking it from you and you and anybody who was around. Just like the drugs increased, my particular criminal activities increased. I went from snatching chains to robbing cab drivers to robbing stores. One day, when I'm homeless, 16 years old, mother kicks me out, I ain't got nothing but this monkey on my back to feed, I devised this plan. I'm on 3rd Avenue in the Bronx, and I'm walking by the store, and I look in, and I see this one old man in there, and I'm thinking, man, this is an easy one. I can get this. Go back to my neighborhood. I talk to two boys, and I'm like, listen, we can get this robbery done. We can get in and out. One guy I'm talking to was real street. The other guy wasn't, much more of a straight-A student doing his thing, but he wanted to be down. He wanted to be cool. So I convinced him. I said, we go in there, we can get this done. We get in and out, get the money. Everything will be fine. So on that particular day, Caesar puts the shotgun inside his pants, and he's instructed to go in and announce the robbery, and I'm going to be right behind you, and I'll get that money. So that's exactly what he do. He walks up in that store halfway, looks at the old man, and announces the robbery. Well, as I'm going past Caesar and I'm looking at that old man, the more close I get to him, the more I see his hand come from underneath that drawer with a 38. And I went from pursuing him to pumping the brakes and running the opposite way in a moment's time for my life. And as I run to the door, I hear it. The shot, and I check myself. I'm good. I turn around and I look at Caesar, and he's trying to run, but he ain't running as fast. Caesar makes it a block and collapse right there. I'm freaked out. Caesar's been shot. This ain't how I planned it. I'm thinking, what can I do? Get on the payphone. Yes, they had payphones back then. I call the ambulance. I'm like, listen, please send somebody. Somebody's been shot. I'm just all scrambled up. I hang up the phone. I go back to my neighborhood. I tell a kid, I said, listen, man, we did this robbery. It didn't go right. Caesar's been shot. He goes out and checks. He comes back an hour later and says, man, they got a sheet over Caesar. Caesar's dead. Completely devastated. We didn't get a t-shirt, a hat, a dollar. This boy's dead. I go back to my neighborhood, and I'm trying to lay low, but the word gets out, and it spreads out. And 2 days later, the cops apprehend me. They charge me an armed robbery in the first degree. Sentenced me to 1.5 to 4.5 years. Did some time on Rikers Island, then went upstate and did the rest of it. Jail was the perfect environment for the way I was coming up because I've been disconnected from feelings. So when you're in jail, you don't show your hand, your feelings. You wear that poker face. So I got out 4 years later, go back to my neighborhood, start hanging out with the same guys, started getting high again. 9 months later, guess where I'm at? Back in the joint. Another robbery charge. On my second bid, I began to really evaluate my life. On my second bid, not the first brother I grew up with, he got shot, and the bullet severed his spine. On my second bid, a lot of the friends I ran with were dead. They were getting murdered in the streets or ODing on drugs. My second bid, I began to search for this thing called God, this person called God. Who is he? What is this? And I began to read the Quran. I began to study Buddhism, Hinduism, looking for meaning, for purpose, and this thing called life. And I can remember reading God's word and sensing and feeling its truth, but I'm not ready to commit to that. I get out on my second bid, and I kid you not, I'm 26 years old, and I didn't plan on living this long. I have no idea what to do with my life. The only thing I got in prison was a GED, and I learned how to type 46 words a minute. Other than that, I never worked a job. I never drew up a resume. I wanted to change, but where could I go? What could I do? So I began to look at my situation and, wait a minute, I got some family out in Kalamazoo. A lot of my father's roots are here. So I called up my grandmother. She was alive at the time. And I said, hey, Grandma, I know you've been hearing the stories about me out here in New York. I said, I really want to change my life. Is there a way that I can kind of come out there and kind of get a fresh start? She was like, all right, baby, come on out here. We're going to take care of you. You're going to be fine. So at 26, I come out to Kalamazoo, and I move in with my grandmother. And I got good intentions, man. Listen to me. I am so sincere. I'm not going to snort or do this. I'm just going to smoke a little weed, drink a little drink. But I'm going to get a job. My intentions and my goals, they're to the best of my ability at the time, were genuine. Like, I want to change my life. I was convinced that New York was the problem, and that if I left New York, things would be better. I quickly find out, no matter where you go, there you are. So if you're a garbage can in New York, you can move me to Iraq. I'll be a garbage can there too. So I came here with my issues, man. I came out here. But I'm young still, and I'm still trying to play this game, and I see my cousin, he out here. I say, hey, man, where's the clubs at? You know, where's the clubs? And he said, well, we got this spot called Wayside. So I go out to Wayside. And I'm there, and the music's playing, and got a couple drinks in me. And I see this young lady, and I'm, man, striking eyes, you know. She's looking good. And we get to talking, and I guess she liked my New York accent at the time. Y'all stole it from me. I've been in the Midwest for the longest. It's gone. But at the time, it was strong, and we got to talking, and there was chemistry. And, man, things progressed quick with this young lady. And 9 months into the relationship, some of the most devastating news is presented to me. For the average, healthy person, this is a great time to celebrate. But for me, her announcing her pregnancy was devastating to me. Because then reality hit, wait a minute. If you're pregnant, then that means I have to be a father. And what does that look like? I had no idea. The more I sat with this idea of fatherhood, the more I seen all of the ways that I was inadequate. Couldn't keep a job. I held this felony badge like it was my first name. Hopelessness. Began to drink again. Seen a psychiatrist for my depression. They gave me medications. And one day I drew the conclusion that the best thing for me to do would be to leave this earth. See, I had thoughts and I had feelings, but I wasn't sharing them with nobody. And the thoughts and the feelings that I had were, you're going to poison this kid. You ain't got nothing to offer. You better off killing yourself. These thoughts would come, whispering. And I would stew in them till one day I acted on them. And so my wife goes to work, and I sit there, and I took 100 pills. My wife worked a whole shift, came home and found me unconscious. Did her best to revive me. It's not working. Calls the ambulance. The ambulance come, rush me to the hospital. I'm in a coma for 3 days. And then I come out. And I'm mad. Why am I here? I want to be here. It's not normal to try to take your own life. They put me in a psychiatric unit. I meet with the doctor. He says, well, Mr. Cloud, seems like you struggle with substance abuse and depression. And I'm like, duh. So they did their best to plug me in with services that would help me. And so I got introduced to an agency that helps people with their mental illness. I got introduced to Narcotics Anonymous. And I tried these things. And after 2 years and 4 rehabs, they didn't work. After 2 years of taking my wife's debit card, spending all the money, lying, hey, I'm going out to take the garbage, come back 3 days later. She got tired of that. My boy was at 2 years old. She said, he's getting older, and he's going to recognize what's going on. So with tears in her eyes, she packed my bags and drove me to the gospel mission and dropped them off and said, I really hope you figure this out. I said, I don't care. I don't need you. And for 1 year, I would travel the north side of Kalamazoo smoking crack cocaine, homeless, dirty, ain't washing my body 4 or 5 days. Began to wither away. Got to the point where I was 125 pounds. The cheekbones in my face were sticking out. One day I'm going to the gospel mission to get a meal. And while I'm there, a guy that was in a rehab 2 years ago see me. He said, hey, man, what's going on? You all right? Oh, I'm not all right. He said, I got like 18 months clean, and I'm in this place called New Beginnings. He was like, yo, you want to go there? And I said, man, I tried rehab 4 times. This ain't never worked for me. But inside, I was so tired, man. I was so hollow. See, what happened was I got to the end of myself, man, where I couldn't even drink or smoke the pain away no more. It was screaming at me. And I knew I had to do something or I was going to die. I just knew it. So I said, all right. I went back to New Beginnings, and I had this conversation with myself. I said, E, you've always been a rebel, man. Why don't you try following the rules? So I said to myself, you know what? All right, guess what? I'm going to follow all your rules. I bet you won't work. Follow all the rules. So, man, I got there. What we got to do? Here's your chore list. Let's go. Doing my chores. You got to go to meetings. Let's do it. Going to meetings. Before I know it, I had like 4 or 5 months under my belt. But the first 6 months of my sobriety was like, oh, my Cedar Point. Not in a good way. I mean, one day I'm up, I'm hopeful, I heard something that inspired me, and the same evening, no external reason, I'm crashing. And I'm thinking, what is going on with me? This isn't normal. The doctor explained to me, man, when you're on drugs for that much, your chemicals are off. You don't have to give this time. Began to have conversations again with my wife. We were separated for a year. And just having a little conversation here and there, and I'm telling her, I said, listen, all that I've done, I know I'm worthy for divorce. I mean, if that's what you decide, I totally understand and respect that. But I'm going to change my life. Like, I'm going to do this. And, you know, she's heard this before. This isn't the first time she heard, oh, you're going to change your life. So she began to watch me. And she began to slowly see that My walk was matching my talk. So we began to also just, let's find a church to go to. So we began to go to church, and man, I'm going to be completely honest with you. I walked in this church, and I'm looking around, and these people got their hands in the air. I'm like, what in the world is going on? But they were nice. They were real nice. They made me feel welcome. And I would come in there, and so, you know, we would do this routine. And I remember the word. The pastor would preach, and I would hear it, and I'd be like, that's good. Something to chew on. So we kind of made this a routine, going to church. And again, when I first went there, man, you know, they got the greeters there. They want to greet your hand. I'm just shaking my head. How you doing? You know, real closed off, man. And so one day, worship is happening, and, you know, the music's playing, and the Spirit's moving, and my wife's doing her thing, and she leans over, and she just says, why don't you put your hands up? I said, okay. I just began to put my hands up, and the song is playing, and in a moment's time, it was like, everybody was gone. And I began to weep, cry. And it wasn't like I'm crying because I feel dirty or I'm mad or I'm angry. I'm weeping because I'm feeling God's love wash over me. It was lathering me. And I began to recognize for the first time that these things that I was chasing and seeking relief from through drugs and other avenues, this is what I'm meant for. Oh my goodness, absolutely phenomenal. And I thought to myself, I don't need a sermon to convince me that God is real, for I just experienced him. So listen to this, check this out. Oh, it gets real. I am literally on fire. I go to the pastor now and I'm like, what can I do? I don't know what skills I have, but what can I do? People need to know God is real. And he says to me, okay, he says, well, this is what we're going to do. We're going to have you be an usher. I was like, usher, okay. So I'm kind of really questioning because he knows my story. And he knows about the robberies. You want me with the collection plate to go on? And he was dead serious. He looked me in the eye. You know what he said? He said, we're not worried about that. You're a new creation. Do you know what that did for me inside? Man, that just spoke life. And it raised me up to when that collection plate came. Boy, with a smile on my face, I passed that thing on down, and all the money stayed in it. But it was on now. I'm like, wait a minute. Okay, so then there was another opportunity. They had a cleaning job at the church. I would like to do that. Had the awesome opportunity for 2 years, man, just to, like, put worship music in, zone out, and clean God's house. I began to go to ministry school and learn about God and the things and the plans and the purposes he has. And it just was like, this is amazing. Began to heal my marriage, man. And years later, I would have the privilege of joining a community of strong spiritual men who would take me under their wing in my 30s. And build and speak life into me. The void that I had, not having a father, I had about 7 different spiritual fathers around me that were able to guide, pour in, show me certain things. We were studying this curriculum. I ain't got that much time. Studying this curriculum called Authentic Manhood. And every chapter had something different. You would read it and have the exercise to do. And I remember turning a chapter and seeing it right there. There it is, the father wound. See, I was all about when Jesus forgive me for my sins. Oh, wait a minute. So now I have to forgive my father. I had no idea that at 12 years old, when I was 12 and he died, holding on to that anger, it would grow into bitterness. And that as a grown man, because I held on to that, it would affect every single solitary relationship in my life. In a moment's time, I felt God's hand, but this particular root of bitterness, I would have to come back to the altar several times, praying, God, get this out of me. I don't want it. The Lord began to free me up, man, on different levels, bro. Just a beautiful thing began to happen. And so, fast forward it somewhat to today. May 8th, I'll be coming up on 12 years of sobriety. It's him. I had no idea that all these things that I'm discussing was hidden in Christ. It was hidden in him. And the more I began to pursue and seek him and know him, the more he began to reveal the plans and purposes he has for me. Today I wear many hats, many hats. I'm a board member for Community Mental Health in Kalamazoo. I'm a loving father, husband. I'm a Christian hip-hop artist. I went from a prisoner to an ordained minister. I can find more ways to describe these titles, but the most one I'm proud of all is a child of God. I'm a child of God. Man, that's priceless. I'm really hoping that this message has resonated with some folks in here. You don't necessarily have to have my background to know that you need him. God is real. God is alive. He's doing some big things. And I'm excited about the future. I love the River Church. You guys are so authentic. But can we switch gears real quick? Is this okay? I'm going to switch gears. I'm going to guess probably like 90% of this crowd probably don't even have a hip-hop CD in their car. But here's what I'm convinced of. This is my belief. Is that no matter what you do or what the genre is, if God is the center of it and he's being glorified in it, then it can move on hearts. So we're going to switch gears real quick, right? And those who are able-bodied and willing and want to stand up, let's stand. Because I'm going to do a song that God gave me years ago that ended up winning a national award. And the song is called He Is Alive. Hey, DJ, drop this. Yeah, River Church, y'all ready? I can't hear you. I said, are y'all ready? Much better. Okay, check it out. We're gonna celebrate right now. Let's go. Listen, I struggled for so long to try to fix myself. My pride wouldn't allow me to ask for help. So I pushed through this life, trying to run from the pain. Got drunk, sobered up, but the hurt remained. Running with the bad crowd, even joined the gang. Felt my sanity slipping. Am I going insane? Each day I'm stressed out, looking over my shoulder, living life without a care. My heart turns colder in the grips of addiction. Was numb to my feelings. Desperate to get a buck, started robbing and stealing. But then I got caught, served years in the prison. Angry at the world, at my life, at the system. Guess I'm just a victim who was dealt a bad hand. Being a criminal wasn't a part of my plan. Could I change if I tried? Could this pain subside? I could feel my heart beating, but I'm dead inside. No matter what you did,
He forgives all sins. Choose Christ and you'll live. Now get your hands up. Get your hands up. No matter what you did. He forgives all sins. Choose Christ and you'll live. Second verse. Check it. After months on the streets, being out on my own, I evaluated my life and where I went wrong. Checked myself into rehab, made a new friend. He took the time out to listen, said he was a Christian. Spoke about Christ, the work on the cross, guaranteed that I can gain much more than I lost. He said Jesus loves me and offered me real freedom. And if I said yes, then my sins are forgiven. So I made the decision to follow his way. And God started the process of healing my pain. I gave him my addictions, he broke the chain. Then he gave me a mission to proclaim his name. I'm here to testify, I did more to survive. Cause of him, I'm alive and got peace inside. Each day that goes by, I'm still living the dream. And I'm just one voice out of the billions redeemed. No matter what you did, he forgives all sins. Choose Christ and you live. Come on, now get your hands up. Get your hands up. Hey, no matter what you did, he forgives all sins. Choose Christ and you live. Third verse, listen. You ain't gotta fight no more or hide no more. Salvation stands on the other side of the door. Open up, let him in, let him wash your sin. Watch the old fade away, real life begin. Can't find a better friend through the thick and thin. He was there in the beginning, he'll be there in the end. He's the great I am, the champion. Tell the devil checkmate, he lost, we win. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. God bless you. Go forth in love. Thank you, sister.
Thanks for listening. For more information, check us out online at theriver.info.